I want to talk to you today about hope. One of the things that you all are is pessimistic by nature. You always look at, oh, they're trying to get us, and they're trying to do that, and they're trying to do this. Pessimism is really easy. Maintaining hope is more difficult. So I want to talk about that. First thing to understand is faith and hope are not the same thing. You can tell they're spelled differently. Let me take you to Hebrews 11, which is as good a place as any. Now, faith is the assurance of things hoped for, the conviction of things not seen. For by it the people of old received their commendation. By faith, we understand that the universe was created by the word of God, so that what is seen is not made out of things that are visible. So faith is the thing that makes things happen. In Hebrews 10, let us hold fast to the confession of our hope, without wavering, for he who promised is faithful. Let us consider how to stir up one another in love and good works, not neglecting to meet together as the habit of some, but encouraging one another, and all the more as you see the day drawing near. Hope and faith are different. Faith is the belief that something will happen. And I use an example. If I look at that chair and I say, that's a great chair. If I sit down in that chair, it's going to support me. So by faith, I sit in the chair, believing the chair will do what it's designed to do. I also hope that that's true, so I don't wind up on the floor. Hope is the thing that sets your goals. You hope that you'll get a raise. You hope that your investments will do well. You hope that somebody will be healed. You hope this, that, or the other thing. That's the thing that sets your goals. Faith is the mechanism by which those goals are achieved. So you have faith that God will do what he says he will do. And so you act on that faith, and as you go through your life acting on your faith that God will do what he says he will do, you'll find out that he does. Now, you also have hope for long-term things, and one of the things that the church does is gives you hope about your eternal destination. You have faith that God will do what he says he would do, so if you do your part, he will do his part. If you don't do your part, he won't do his part because he says he won't. So again, you have faith in his words, but you have hope in his eternal goal. Now, that's long term. Short term is you hope things will happen. You hope that your car will work as you drive to work. All those kinds of things. And so short term then, hope is your goal setter. One of the things that Scripture does is it helps you maintain your faith and your hope. They're words of encouragement. For example, the pastoral letters from Peter and Paul, James, John, and so forth. Those are all set up to encourage hope as well as to correct error. From 1 Peter, verse 13. Now, who is there to harm you if you are zealous for what is good? But even if you should suffer for righteousness' sake, you will be blessed, have no fear of them, nor be troubled. So what he's not promising you is a problem-free life. But in your hearts regard Christ, the Lord is holy, always being prepared to make a defense to anyone who asks you for a reason for the hope that is in you. In other words, even if you're going through tough times, you still have hope. And in many cases, that hope is long-term because your short-term situation may be terminal. But you have hope long-term. Romans 15, for whatever is written in former days was written for our instruction, that through endurance and through the encouragement of the Scriptures, we might have hope. These letters and the Scriptures and so forth lay out the promises of God and give you hope that those promises will be fulfilled. For example, today we read in Ezekiel a statement of the new covenant. God says, I'm going to bring everybody back together, two sticks. I'm going to move them into their land. I'm going to be their God. They're going to be my people. That's the new covenant. It hasn't happened yet. Ezekiel was writing some 700 years before the advent of Christ. So it's been 2,700 years since that promise was made, and it has not yet happened. And the part that hasn't happened is Ephraim is not back. Then, by the way, you notice Judah leads the way. Notice in the Torah portion today, Judah was sent first. Judah is the one who comes back to the land first. And Judah then becomes the first fruits of the new covenant, and the rest of them are yet to come. But it's been 2,700 years, and that's still going on. The whole point of these pastoral letters is to give you hope. Now, one of the things about this world that we're in is it's a combat zone. And by the way, that's a feature, not a bug, designed to be difficult, because difficulty develops character. But in order for you to persevere and keeping on keeping on, as they used to say, you have to have hope that something is eventually going to work out. And the problem with our society today is with the decline of religion, people no longer have any long-term hope. They may have short-term hope. I hope I'll get a job. I hope I get married. I hope I have kids. I hope I do whatever. But long-term, there isn't any hope. So what they're doing is they are finding their meaning in the community. Now, that's not entirely bad, because we're all members of a community, and our place in the community gives us short-term hope. You had people last night that were going around making latkes, decorating the place, making salads and all that kind of stuff. And as a member of a community, that gives you a purpose. I mean, you've got other purposes too, but I'm just saying that's an example. And the problem with most of the society is you all have a long-term hope as well as a short-term hope. So your short-term hope is informed by your long-term hope. A great deal of society doesn't have that. So they spend their time following wherever the crowd leads. Now, if the crowd's going in a good direction, that's okay, but mostly it's not. So, what does that have to do with us right now? And what are we hoping in short term? And what I'm going to talk to you about is the new administration that's coming in. That is a source of short term hope. Now, and I firmly believe this, having survived several assassination attempts now, I believe Mr. Trump has been protected by God. I firmly believe that, because the difference was millimeters. One of the things that I've mentioned before is the biblical character that Trump best represents is Samson. And for those of you who know the story of Samson, big guy, strong guy, got a taste for the ladies. And he is a Nazarite, which means he doesn't drink. Trump doesn't drink. So big guy, long hair, taste for the ladies, doesn't drink, and runs roughshod over people. So one of the things that Samson does is he routinely gets bound by the Philistines, because he's given the Philistines all sorts of trouble. Vignettes, if you will, is he asks some gal for her hand in marriage, and she asks for something, and he goes and loots it from the Philistines and gives it to her. So he's a rough guy. And one of the things that's happened with Mr. Trump is the Philistines have tried to bind him now for 4 years. That's what all this lawfare is about. You've had various Philistines take him into court trying to bind him. Samson says, well, if you bind me with a new bowstring, that'll take me down. So his wife binds him with a new bowstring, calls the Philistines in, he breaks the bowstring, slaps all the Philistines around. So anyway, Samson, Trump, Philistines have attempted to bind him without any success. What I also hope is that the rest of the story of Samson will not play out, because when his wife does finally cut his hair and get him bound, he becomes a slave of the Philistines for a period of time until his hair grows out. And then they bring him into a big feast to mock him, and they have him chained up between the supports of the roof. What they don't notice is his hair has grown back. He's blind, and he says to himself, pulls his arms together, the roof collapses and kills everybody, to include himself. So I'm hoping that part of the Samson legend does not apply to Trump. But so far, he's doing well. I was reading Doug Wilson, who's a Calvinist up in Idaho. And one of the things that he said is that the government we have now bears very little relation to the government that was set up in 1778. And one of the things about the government then was there were three branches of government: legislative, executive, and judicial. What we have now is we have agencies that are theoretically part of the executive, but over which the president has no control. These are nominally executive branch organizations, but the president has no practical control because their directors and their personnel are nominated after a certain period of time, and they can't be removed except for malfeasance. So the IRS, the FBI, the FEC, the NIH, all of these organizations that are semi-independent are not part of the executive branch. They're something else entirely. So my hope, notice I'm talking about hope here, my hope here is that Samson will be able to pull the roof down on those agencies, those that still need to exist, and there's lots of them I don't believe need to exist, but if they do need to exist, that they get back under executive control like they were designed to be. The other part of that is, as we were listening to the Torah portion today, you'll notice that Joseph, over a period of 7 years, turned the Egyptians from free people into serfs, sold them back all the food that they had grown, took their livestock, took their land, and finally took them, and they became serfs to Pharaoh. One of the things that you should have noticed is there was an exemption to that. The priests, the permanent bureaucracy in Pharaoh's government, they were not affected by this. They had their own land, they kept their own land, they were not taxed, and so forth. And what we have let grow up is our priests, if you will, in government, who are exempt from all of the stuff, and furthermore, they think that they can write laws. All of these EPA regulations, all of the ATF regulations, all of the NIH regulations, there's no legislative authority for any of that. It is by fiat of this non-executive branch executive organization. One of the things that Wilson was talking about, our character was formed by our theology. The founding fathers and everybody were mostly Calvinist Puritans, and they had a worldview that is what he would call postmillennial, which is to say, Christ saved us, told us to get to work and clean the planet up. That's in 25 words or less what postmillennialism is. And that inspired a can-do attitude in Americans. He said he was talking to a friend who was British, and I was just complaining bitterly about the schools. Wilson looked at him and said, "Why don't you start your own school?" And the Brit looked at him and he said, "That is so American." Not something that they would have thought about. The point I'm making here is, as Americans, we still have a residual of this attitude, and we have elected somebody who has said, we need to get this monster back under our control where it's supposed to be. That is what my hope is. You all heard of the Gordian Knot in the time of Alexander the Great. The Gordian Knot was a very complicated knot that tied a wagon up. The myth was that he who can untie the Gordian Knot will conquer all of Asia. So Alexander looked at this thing and said, to heck with that, took out his sword and goes whack,
He
cuts it in half and proceeded to conquer all of Asia. The point is, this administrative state that has been put together is like a Gordian knot. And if you try and go in there and untangle all the strands, you will be untangling strands until Christ returns, because it has deliberately been made complicated and difficult. So the only way to do that is to take your sword and cut it in half. And that is what my hope is, that Mr. Trump, along with his minions in the Department of Government, something or other, will say, to heck with all these petty regulations, you're gone. And that's cutting the Gordian knot. Because as I say, if you try and go in there with all the civil service procedures and all that, you will be trying to untie a knot for the rest of your life, and probably until Christ comes, because it's designed not to be untied. So that's the only way to fix it. As you go out from here, I will suggest that you keep your hope, put your faith in God, and pray in accordance with what you hope will happen. Because prayer is a mechanism that turns hope into reality. Just like faith is a mechanism that turns hope into reality.